Safety, dependability, and power. Chevy Silverado isn't happy unless the work is hard and the day is long. No wonder Silverado is America's number one best-selling retail pickup truck. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
Hey everyone, it's Monday, and it's a Mesero Monday on Your Money Matters. We have a great show for you just around the corner. Leo Harmon from Mesero going to chat a little bit about looking forward in 2023. And a little bit about, I mean, it was a volatile year in the stock market in 2022. A lot of people lost a lot of money, but it was unusual in one aspect, and we'll chat with Leo about that and what to look forward to into 2023. We'll also chat about protecting your credit during a recession and how restaurants could save Soldier Field. I'm a little dubious about that. We'll chat with a reporter from the Chicago Eater about that and plenty more coming up on a Mesero Monday on Your Money Matters. We jump right into a Mesero Monday with Leo Harmon. Leo, it's good to chat with you, my friend. How you doing?
Good, John. Happy New Year. I think we can still say Happy New Year.
I think so. Some people, I think all of January you get covered with that. Boy, I think a lot of people are looking forward to 2023 after 2022. Although I don't know what we're going to get, and I don't think anyone really does, do they?
No, and it's I think we talk a lot about, you know, 2022 not really having any place to hide.
Right.
If you look at your sort of classic 60-40 portfolios.
So as you get more conservative when you get into retirement or near it, the idea is less stock volatility, more bonds.
Absolutely.
That didn't go so well last year.
That didn't go so well last year because bonds were equally bad, or not quite equally bad, but certainly
close
to being as bad as stocks. So you didn't really get any diversification from your bond portfolio.
Well, looking to 2023, is there anything that signals that won't be the case in 2023, or too early to tell? What are you telling people that are worried about their 60-40 allocation?
Yeah, we talk a lot about interest rates maybe peaking out here, at least from the standpoint of the Fed. So when we look at expectations for Fed's funds, somewhere around 5%, 5.25% seems to be the peak. And if that's the case, this is probably the first time in a long time where if you are an income investor, you can actually make income on short-term treasuries and on short-term debt.
Can you explain what an income investor is? Because I think a lot of people listen and go, well, I want to be an income investor. What does that mean versus a non-income investor?
Yeah, an income investor is a person that's more focused on driving current income. Usually those are people that are living on a fixed income or have fixed budgets, and they need to have extra income in order to augment their Social Security or savings. A non-income investor usually is more invested in equities, is more dependent on capital gains and capital losses to drive their investment portfolio.
So an income investor, they want the returns coming, whether it's in the form of interest from the treasuries that they buy
or dividends
that they're earning. Okay, that makes sense to me. So 2023, I think that the one thing that you seem pretty confident on based on what we talked about before you came on is, you know, we don't know where the markets are going to end up, but volatility could be the name of the game.
And volatility will be the name of the game. It's really interesting because the economy is a really backward-looking mechanism. And markets are a forward-looking mechanism. And we're kind of in this this conundrum right now where a lot of the monetary policy that we saw from the Fed last year will start to impact the economy this year.
Mm-hmm.
But markets are going to be forward-looking, and they're going to be thinking about what's going to happen in 2023 and 2024 in order to start to move higher in the base. And so we're kind of at this decision point relative to how much and how far the markets can go, but you need to have a clearing event in 2023 relative to whether or not we're going to get a recession, how long that recession is going to be. And until you actually have that happen, you're just creating an environment for more volatility in the market.
I see what you're saying. The market can't quite see far enough into the future yet, so until it has a better sense of maybe where they think the economy's going, the market's going to be just as confused as the rest of us.
Absolutely.
And I just to retrace a little bit to make sure we understand it, when we're saying that the economy is backward looking, the Fed's actions, raising the interest rates, that immediate action, the markets react to that because they anticipate what's going to happen. But the actual, what it does to our wallets, that impact isn't felt till now from a couple months ago, the rates.
Or it's usually a 12 to 24 month lag depending on that time frame. So the Fed started raising rates in the beginning of 2022, started to move more aggressively in March and April of 2022. That impact gets felt in March and April of 2023.
Right. But even if it is felt now, the markets may have already reacted to it, and so you may not see a dive in the markets while we're having some more pinching in our pocketbooks. We're just getting started, Leo. Mesiro.com, M-E-S-I-R-O-W.com, 1-877-MESIRO if you want to talk to Leo or any of the really smart people from there. Trust me, you want to. Let's get a look at weather and traffic, though, for a moment. It's a Mesiro Monday. And I'm super excited because every week this year is going to have a Mesiro Monday. We're going to be doing some podcasting with Mesiro. Each week you'll be able to get some new information at WGNradio.com. We'll play some clips about all the Mesiro advisors, just covering all the basics, which I think, Leo, is awesome because the world of finance is always on people's minds. Obviously, we have this show. We have the Wintrust Business Lunch. We do all sorts of stuff. But there's some really important topics that I think people need to have explained, like conversions from Roth to IRA. We use all these terminology. So our podcast is going to do a great job at breaking that stuff down for people. I look forward to it.
A good deal for the audience.
Yeah, for sure. It'll be every Mesiro Monday. You'll be able to find something new. Before we get on to more stuff about the economy, Leo, I forgot that you were on a flag football team and you got to be quarterback recently, didn't you?
Just for a little bit. Well, for one series, yeah, I was Tom Brady with my elderly arm throwing the ball around.
How'd that go for you?
Not good.
You don't have a quarterback percentage
I didn't. I was 1 for 2.
Okay. Not so bad.
I didn't throw a pick.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. All right. So as we look towards, I mean, inflation was the boogeyman, right, of 2022. Not knowing where it was going, obviously much higher than anyone wants. You'd get an okay report, then a bad one. This seems to be trending in the right direction. Obviously, you never know what could happen. But I think the general consensus is, well, higher than we'd like, we're looking at this downward. Are you seeing the same indicators?
Yeah, and I think it all depends on what type of inflation you're measuring. So certainly, if you're looking at the price of goods and the price of energy, you've already seen those numbers start to turn down. Some of the inflation and services are still moving higher, and those are lagging those goods and energy prices a bit. But those should start to turn down in the early part of this year, the latter part of this year as well. So we should have an exit rate of inflation this year that is much lower than where we started the year.
That's certainly good. I know the Fed wants it back down to 2%. I read at the top of the show, the average folks thinks it's going to be about 5% at the start of next year. I think if you were the Fed, you would not be happy if it was at 5% a year from now. But I think we'd all be surprised if it got down to 2%. Do you think I have that right, that it's somewhere in that range,
it's
perhaps?
Probably somewhere in that range. I think the areas of inflation that could get closer to 2% will be that the energy and the goods, because they're earlier through that process and will get there faster. I think the service parts of inflation will still be higher, much higher than 2%, mm-hmm. But not quite 5%. And I think the trajectory is the right direction, but probably not quite to the Fed's goal. If we're still at 5%, the Fed didn't do its job, and it's going to be a really tough year for investors.
Oh, absolutely, right. And that impacts directly what is happening with the Fed rate, which we'll get to in just a moment, because we still have another, I think, about a month until we get the next meeting. One indicator of inflation or where it could be going is wages. And I know in the latest jobs report, the number of new jobs was kind of like a Goldilocks number. People seemed satisfied. It had slowed down from earlier months, but it wasn't nothing, right? Like, massive layoffs aren't, like, accelerating too much. But the wages were cooling off a little bit. I know that might drive the everyday person upset when we celebrate wage growth slowing down. But that is a good thing overall for the economy, is it not?
It's a good thing overall as long as wages are growing faster than inflation. Mm-hmm. So what you're hoping for is that there's this aspect of wages that still need to catch up to where we were with inflation last year. We saw wages move at least our average hourly earnings down to about 4.6% year over year. But inflation is still higher than
right.
that. And so what you want is to maintain that wage at that level while inflation falls and get to a point where your wages are outstripping inflation. That's really truly the Goldilocks, at least for the consumer, as it relates to wages and inflation.
So we don't want to see wages drop to only 1% rising or something along those lines. We want to see them kind of go down in tandem. Or as you're saying, all right, we're at 4.6 now for wages, hold steady near there, and then hopefully inflation shall dip underneath that.
Exactly. You want to see wages slower, and you want to see inflation fall faster. And if that's happening, then you're in a good place. If you start to see wages fall very quickly, there's something else going wrong in the economy.
Right.
Our slowdown is happening too fast. There's a recession that is going to be bigger than we expected. And so you really don't want to see wages fall that quickly. But from a Fed standpoint and from a Fed watcher standpoint, the Fed wants to see wages come down over time and get closer to that 2 to 3% range.
Boy, it's not easy being the Fed.
No.
I don't want that job.
It's a balancing act. We were laughing. It's like the John Cougar Mellencamp song, "When I fight authority, authority always wins." You didn't want to fight the Fed this year. They were raising rates. They were fighting inflation. I think we've gotten to a point where inflation is under control. And so I don't think you'll have to fight the Fed as much this year. We're much more worried about what's going to happen in the economy, what's going to happen with general growth rates, than we are, hopefully, about fighting the Fed and fighting inflation.
Obviously, everyone concerned about inflation when you go to the grocery store. Gas prices have come down a bunch from where they were, but you know, maybe more elevated than people like. But who you really feel for are those people on those fixed incomes that's just eating away. And they're not earning that income necessarily higher, that it's not keeping up. Maybe Social Security's kept up pretty well. I know it's going up again this year. That should probably alleviate some concerns, right, of people that are at or just about a retirement. If they can see that inflation number go down, they can feel a little bit knowing that the long run that they've established for themselves, that runway hopefully will make it as far as they want it to if inflation cools off.
And absolutely. And the fact that rates actually moved higher gives them a chance to invest new money at higher rates this year to at least offset some of the impact of inflation.
For sure. All right, let's do fun five, we'll call it. Things that could happen. It's always hard to say. Will definitely never hear the words "will happen" out of anyone.
Always could happen.
Yeah, could happen.
We have regulators we have to be aware of, so
okay,
we can't make any guarantees.
Right. But what are you looking at?
Well, certainly we talked a little bit about this, you know, earlier, but this year is kind of like an exercise regimen. You're going to have pain and gain. There's going to be a lot of volatility. We think we're going to get more pain in the first half of the year. We think we'll get more gain in the back part of the year. We're hopeful that as we transition through the year, we'll start to see an exit rate on the markets that are higher than where we are at the beginning
so
of the year.
Pain and gain. That's
pain and gain is number one.
I want to add just one point about pain and gain, because some people hear that and go, "Oh, well, then I'll just wait till the gain part to jump in." And we've talked about this, dollar cost averaging.
Yes.
Probably your best strategy here, because if you're going to try and time this out, it's probably not going to go well for you.
It's going to be really hard to time, because you're going to get the bottoming process for equity markets is really truly a process. It takes time. There's a lot of volatility involved. You get a lot of false rallies.
You
test the waters a little bit. And this is the type of year where you can hit both ends of the extreme, where you can hit last year's lows and you can hit last year's highs.
Whoa.
And so you really need to be nimble in your thought process around tactically investing in these markets.
Okay. All right. That was number one, pain and gain. What else we got?
Number two, markets over the economy. And what do I mean by
that? Yeah.
I think the markets will be better than the economy overall.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talked a little bit about this pain and gain, and we talked a little bit about the economy being a little more backward looking and that being impacted this year. Markets are going to price that in earlier. And so markets are going to at least be more forward looking about where the improvement in the economy is going to happen. And we think by the end of the year, we'll be in the process where markets start to look forward and markets should have a better year than the economy overall.
And basically, it's a way of saying, not that this will for sure happen, but you could find out and get news. The headlines could say recession, and the market could be rallying.
Absolutely.
Because they see it pass. And some people go, "How does that happen?" Well, you just explained it. All right, what do you got for number three?
Number three, the Fed won't matter as much as it did last year.
Okay.
Growth is going to be the bigger problem this year. And when we talk about growth, we're not only talking about economic growth, but also talking about earnings growth. And so we think companies are going to struggle in the first half of this year to adjust to a new inflation regime, slower revenue growth, higher costs, and lower margins. And so those have to transition through the balance sheets and the income statements of companies before we see the other side.
So instead of analyzing every word that maybe comes out of Jerome Powell's mouth, although of course we still will, we'll be looking at earnings, and and that's really what will drive things. All right, we got about a minute left for these next two, so we'll do rapid fire. What's number
four? Inflation will be very close to 3% by the end of the year.
Oh, knock on wood. Okay.
And regardless of whether we get a recession, I think we'll avoid the worst case scenario. Balance sheets for both the consumer and for corporations are really good. We won't get as big of a labor problem as we do in most recessions because we already have a labor shortage. And we've been making investments in reshoring for the economy. That should help help cushion any slowdown or recession we get in the latter part of the year.
We could land the plane.
We could land a plane with a little bit
bump.
Of damage.
Right. Like one of those ones where you land and everyone goes, oh, wait, hold on. And then you clap afterwards because you're like, that was a little rough. We'll wait and see. Leo Harmon, it's always fun talking to you, my friend. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Great Mesiro Monday. MESIROW.com to talk to Leo or any other the fine folks there. You can call 1-877-MESIRO, MESIROW. They are smart people, and they know what they're talking about. Time for the news on WGN. This is Your Money Matters on this Mesiro Monday. We do have a question of the day today. I'd love to give it out for you. And we got a WGN Radio t-shirt, 100th anniversary t-shirt, if you get this right. Okay. The list of the top 10 most expensive what in the country includes 5 west of the Mississippi River and 5 east of the Mississippi River. What am I talking about? If you listed the top 10 most expensive blank in the U.S., 5 of them are to the west of the Mississippi River, and 5 of them are to the east. 312-981-7200. Call right now for your chance to win. Got Jennifer Streaks on the line now, senior personal finance reporter at Insider. Jennifer, good to chat with you here on this Monday.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
For sure. I know a lot of people are preparing for a recession that could come. We don't know how deep it might be. Some people say we're already in it. It's hard to kind of plan when we don't really know how bad it's going to get. But when it comes to your credit, it is important to keep that as intact as possible, right?
That's very true. Your credit would be even more important during a recession than ever because you just don't know what you may need.
Right. You may not need anything. You might be okay. You might keep your job, and that's good. But I don't know if you needed a loan, if something happened, if you needed to refinance a car, a house, anything along those lines, that credit is tied to all of it.
It is. It's tied to all of it. And with the recession and inflation and interest rates going up, it makes borrowing money on any level more expensive. So that's why your credit during those times will be even more important.
All right. Let's say there is a few things we can do here before it gets here. Let's say we get the recession maybe at the end of the first quarter, second quarter. We got a couple months here. What are a couple things that we can be doing? I know it's easier said than done, but you got a couple tips for us?
Definitely. The first thing you want to do is pay off any existing or lingering debt. Really try to reduce your debt load. Keep in mind that, you know, credit cards have a variable interest rate. So that interest rate can rise and increase during a recession. And then if that happens, your debt load is going to be even more expensive. So if you can pay down your debt and then you're not paying more money for carrying that debt, that puts more money in your pocket and also protects your credit.
Are you talking, Jennifer, mainly about credit card debt? Because obviously a lot of people have mortgages. Maybe they got a great rate. Maybe they got a car loan before the rates were too high. Are people okay still paying those monthly payments as is, but as long as they're not carrying that credit card debt? Or should you maybe be trying to kind of tackle all three?
I think that if you have a home loan and you got a really good interest rate before things started going up, then definitely, you know, stick with that because, you know, at this point, it's unlikely that you're going to be able to refinance into anything lower. So definitely look at revolving credit, look at credit card debt, try to get that out of the way and make sure that you're not, because that's the only thing where your interest rate can be varied and it can go up and down and mostly up during a downturn, an economic downturn. You want to make sure that you get that debt off your plate.
Right. And we just talked about at the top of the show the number of revolving debt going up 17% year over year in the past month. That's no good. Okay, let's say people don't have any credit card debt. That's great news. You're feeling good about that. What's tip number two maybe, or something to focus on next?
Next thing I would say is to build an emergency fund. The thing that comes with a recession is job instability. And we saw a lot of that in the tech sector with a lot of high-profile layoffs. So when you have any sort of instability or even that potential, you really want to make sure that you have an emergency fund so that you don't have to rely on credit cards, so that you don't have to take out a loan to keep up with your payments or expenses if you were to lose your job. And that's the beauty of an emergency fund. It keeps you out of high interest debt. So it's really important to take this time, if we've got a couple of months or even an entire quarter before a recession really hits, to build that emergency fund.
All right. You have here about talking to lenders. What sorts of chats should we be having with lenders right now?
If you can call into your lenders and say, hey, you know, I've been a long-term customer. I've never missed a payment. I've been a, you know, great customer of yours. I would like to see if I can get your best interest rate. Is there any way that we can lower the interest rate on my credit card right now on my personal loan and see if we can get that down, which will also impact, you know, your payment? And, you know, during times of, you know, economic crisis, you might have something where you lose your job or your hours are cut. That's when you want to be in communication with your lenders the most before you miss a payment. So if you know that you're not going to make a payment this month or something happened with your job and you're just not going to be able to make that payment, call them ahead of time and see if there's something that you can do. Most lenders during time of economic crisis or downturn, they're going to come up with some sort of program. And if you've been a good customer in the past, they would rather work with you than see your account with them go into collection or you miss a series of payments.
Right, because if it goes into collections, they're not going to earn anywhere near what they could. And they want to keep you as a customer through the times and keep you going afterwards as well. It's not that they don't want to make interest off you. Of course, that's kind of the name of the game. But they want to keep you reasonably happy. Okay, so call them up. And before you miss that payment, don't come after them after the fact. So plan ahead. You also have here about sticking to a budget. Jennifer, that's always super important, but we're just out of time. But I'd say that's always a go-to option, whether it's a recession coming or not. Jennifer, we appreciate your time, okay?
Thank you.
Personal finance reporter at Insider. All right, there's 10 most expensive of these in the country. 5 are west of the Mississippi River, 5 are east. Really quickly, let's go to Wally. Wally, what is your guess on WGN?
College tuitions.
College tuitions. Great guess, just not the answer. 312-981-7200 for your guess. Let's go to Mary Vandeville for a look at weather and traffic. Hey, Mary. Before we find out if restaurants can save Soldier Field, which I'm curious about, it's an interesting article. See if we can get an answer to the question of the day. 10 most expensive of these, if you list them 1 to 10 in the United States of America, 5 are west of the Mississippi River, 5 are east, and even split. Dawn, what is your guess?
Restaurants.
Ooh, interesting. I bet they're all in New York and California, which would make it an even split. It's a great guess, just not the answer. Let's go to Mike. Mike, what's your guess?
My guess is casinos.
Oh, maybe like Las Vegas and Atlantic City?
No, along the Mississippi River.
Oh, along the river too, right? 5 west of it.
5 east. Casinos.
It's a good guess, just not the answer. Let's go to Dave. Dave, you're on WGN. What's your guess?
The cost for gas.
Oh, like states. 5 east, 5 west. Interesting guess. I'm going to look that up. It's just not the answer, Dave. I'm sorry. Thanks for playing, though.
Thanks, John. Love you.
Oh, you too, Dave. I appreciate that. 312-981-7200 if you've got any guesses. Ashok Savam joins us now from the Chicago Eater. I know we're all talking about this new proposal for Soldier Field and what it could be. Ashok, boy, wasn't that a flashy video they showed us?
Oh, yeah. The timing was wonderful, wasn't it? You know, we got a mayoral campaign, the end of the Bears season, and boom, we hit with that on Sunday.
Complete with a Bill Curtis voiceover. And a lot of what you noticed in this video and these plans revolve around entertainment and restaurants. Is there any sense that this anything like this, one, could happen, or two, why doesn't it happen independent of what's happening at Soldier Field? Let's tackle part number one first. What did you notice?
Well, you always see in these flashy videos or these awesome flashy renderings, they have these placeholder names. You know, in this particular video, it pans into the stadium, into the reimagined Soldier Field, and you see something called First Down Food Hall, and that's really great alliteration. But what are they going to put in that First Down Food Hall? A food hall at a stadium? I mean, are we going to have, like, Beggar's Pizza? Are we going to have, you know, like, some Italian beef under a heat lamp for 2 hours that's really chewy and not really appetizing? What could they put? Like, it sounds amazing. I feel like Chicago stadiums are kind of behind the curve compared to other stadiums. Like, you look at where the New York Mets play, they have wonderful food. You look at the Sky Dome where the Toronto Blue Jays, they have, like, under the dome, they have, like, a stadium in the center field eye. But Chicago hasn't had, like, the space to do it. And I think this goes into the second part of your question. It's real estate. It's a game of real estate for restaurant owners. You know, they can't afford large spaces. It's such a premium. You go to the West Loop off on Randolph Street. It's insane. And folks are wondering if independent restaurants can survive over there. But if the city, on the taxpayer's dime, can, subsidize football, subsidize restaurants, it creates a little bit of opportunity.
The South Loop in general, I love the neighborhood, but it doesn't have a ton of restaurants and bars, and I know we're going to get some angry texts from people about some great locations, but that area could really use some revitalization in terms of the food scene, could it not?
Every time I compile the staff at Eater Chicago, compile the list of best restaurants in the South Loop, I always get, one, you're not doing a good job. Where are the great restaurants? It's not River North. It's not West Loop. It's not Fulton Market. Then I get the other side where folks are like, this makes me really sad. I don't really have pride in my neighborhood because there are not a lot of wonderful restaurants. And I think it's obviously tied to development. You know, if there's going to be that kind of threshold of a tenant's residential to kind of push it to what, well, we need to get a restaurant. And it hasn't historically attracted the big name groups. I think in the 90s, you had a couple of big names there, but they fizzled out. And, it's kind of a mess. It's a little hodgepodge down there.
Would they want to get commitments from restaurants before they built these things out? Or if this ever happened, let's say, or really any new project that Soldier Field may go under, whether it's the Bears or not, if they revitalize this area, do you have any idea about how that process works? Do they like to sign restaurants ahead of time, or is it done so far in advance that they just build the space and then hope the chefs will come?
It's, food isn't the number one priority. It never will be. And you can compare that to what's happening in River West with the casino at the old Tribune Freedom Center. You can compare it to what's happening on the south side in Pullman with the Obama Center. They're building spaces, and they want to partner with restaurant groups. And, probably in the case of Bally's with the casino, they have prior relationships with restaurant companies and other markets, and they can kind of leverage that to bring them there. But no, the space isn't going to be customized to the restaurant. Like, for example, in Wrigley Field, Hot Dogs, the iconic hot dog sausage slinger, he has a stand in the bleachers. But, he can't, bring in kind of the sausages he normally does. He is he has to bring Vienna beef in because that's Vienna beef is what the official sausage of the Cubs, and that's the Wrigley Field Stadium. So he's got to kind of adapt to what's there. And these restaurant operators, whoever they are, and in Soldier Field it's a lot of, maybe ifs. They're going to have to say, hey, this is a chance to get the word out about my restaurant. Maybe some folks from out of town, maybe some suburban folks to come in the next week, make a trip, and this is good advertising. But it's not like they're going to make like a three-star Michelin restaurant in that space.
Right. One development that I will point to is when the Cubs kind of redeveloped the area around Wrigley Field, attached to Hotel Zachary, there are a series of restaurants right along Clark Street. I will say I like some of the names in there that we know, like Westtown Bakery, that barbecue place. Why can't I not think the name of it? You probably know off the top of your head. Big Star.
Smoke Daddy.
Yeah, I did appreciate that they were businesses that had other locations in Chicago, but they were at least kind of smaller restaurants, not the big chains that we're aware of. Is that a tough needle to thread? Can the Bears try and do that here?
I mean, I think you have to. Absolutely, because you heard Bill Curtis's voice on that video. You know, they wanted to show off the culinary industry like nothing was done before. And I think that could you could do chains in another market like Indianapolis. I'm going to rag on them a little bit. A couple years ago, there was a controversy. It was covered by the Indy Star. There was the Big Ten tournament at the United Center. Mm-hmm. And a lot of folks from other schools were complaining about how there weren't restaurants within walking distance from the United Center. They like the kind of all-in-one entertainment district like Lucas Field had in Indianapolis. So that's a lot easier on that kind of basis to work with those groups, those big chains, the Applebee's, et cetera. But independent restaurants, that's their reputation on their line. They don't want to sully their name. You know, if they're going to go big, like you mentioned Whistown Bakery in Wrigley, they're putting up end of the month, they're opening up a flagship restaurant in Willis Tower called Kinley. And that's being customized. But, you know, they're going on that with the intention of revitalizing the Sleepy Loop Business District. You know, they're going big over there.
Yeah.
I don't know if Soldier Field with Bears as a, you know, a tenant. And you got to consider the Park District as well. What cut are they going to take? What restaurants? What's the end game here?
Yeah, for sure. Ashok, we appreciate your time. I know we don't have an answer of whether it'll keep the Bears there. We'll have to keep us posted. All right, Ashok?
No problem. Have a good day.
Yeah, from the Eater. Great stuff. Let's take a break. Hopefully get an answer to the question of the day before news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN. Five are west of the Mississippi River, five are east. Let's go to Sarah. Sarah, what's your guess?
Hotels?
No, it's not the guess. It's a great guess, though. A lot of people were guessing hotels. Let's go to Fran. Fran, what is your guess?
The price of a sporting event, a ticket.
The ticket of a sporting event. No, that's a good guess, though, Fran. Which means we're going to roll this on over till tomorrow. Get your guesses in there. Hey, John Weideman is an absolute legend. I can't wait to hear him back on the broadcasts when he's feeling better and his voice is good. Joe Brand would never say this, but he has done a killer job filling in for John.